Hello, hello. Welcome to What to Read Wednesdays, your go-to podcast for staff picks from your friends at Delaware County District Library. Here, we'll talk about books, podcasts, and other relevant media. I'm your host, Annie Pasma. Hello, everyone. So, this is our last episode of 2020. In this episode, we're going to go over some of my coworkers' favorite books that were read in 2020. There were some who could only reread their favorites from years ago because 2020 is 2020, but there are some who found favorites this year. I kind of fall into both camps, actually. I read some old favorites, but then I found a few books that may just be some new favorites. Because the Ember and the Ashes series finished this year, I am currently listening to the last book, and I talk about that series way too often on this podcast. I listened to the whole series this last year. It is such a good series. It has everything you want in a fantasy series and is really well written. Looking back on my Goodreads account, which if you don't have a Goodreads account, you need to get a Goodreads account. It's amazing. I see books I have read and listened to over this last year, and there are some very good ones. So Mike Rowe's The Way I Heard It was so, so good. Rowe from the show Dirty Jobs has a podcast called The Way I Heard It, which is essentially short stories about people in history. The way he presents the stories is kind of a mystery. You don't know who he is talking about until the very end. So the whole time, you're trying to figure out who he's talking about. The audiobook is read by Mike Rowe and are some of his favorite stories and interspersed with the stories from his own life. So he has like the story of the person in history, and then after the big reveal, he has a story from like his childhood or from some of the jobs he's had. Really, really good. So definitely that one. Wendell Berry has become one of my favorite authors of all time. And so far, my favorite book of his is Hannah Coulter. Such a beautiful story, such beautiful writing. And the audiobook was also really, really good. So Shannon told me that her favorite book of 2020 was The House in the Cerulean Sea by T.J. Clune. She loved this book because it felt like a warm hug, something she thought we all needed many times this year. This is a fantasy story about a caseworker for the department in charge of magical youth who travels to orphanages of magical children to make sure everything is as it should be. When he travels to Mary Sayas Island Orphanage, the six children and their caretaker show him a new way to look at the world around him. It's a beautiful story of love, found family, and acceptance. It's technically an adult book, but Shannon thinks it could be enjoyed by readers from ages 10 to 100. Katie at Orange let me know that her favorite book of the year was The Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires by Grady Hendrix. This year, she really struggled with reading anything too real, too heartfelt, or too complex. The Southern Book Club came along exactly when she needed it. It was darkly humorous and darkly dark. There were some gruesome moments, and it was just the kind of escapism she was looking for. This wasn't for the faint of heart, but if you feel like reading something that blends What We Do in the Shadows, 30-something, and True Blood, then this is definitely the book for you. Our communications director, Nicole, recommends Mallory and Ready Player Two, but I'll let her tell you about it.
Hey, listeners. I'm Nicole Fowles, communications manager for the library. I'm not typically a person who reads only the newest novels by the hottest authors. However, it just happened that two of my new favorite authors published sequels, or new books, in 2020. So first up is the sequel that I never knew I needed, but I'm so glad I got. It's called Mallory by Josh Malerman. Mallory, M-A-L-O-R-I-E, is the follow-up to Mallerman's debut title, Bird Box, which was released in March of 2014. Bird Box is a horror novel and perhaps one of the scariest books I've read in the last 10 years. It's based on the premise that an alien race of creatures has come to the Earth and humans are unable to comprehend the sight of them, and they're driven immediately to insanity, harming themselves and everyone else around them. So in the remainder of Bird Box, the protagonist Mallory discovers how to live in a world where sight can kill you, and she has to find a way to bring her children to safety. So it has an incredibly satisfying ending, which is why I was pleasantly surprised, maybe moderately scared, when a sequel was announced for July of 2020. So if you haven't read Bird Box and now you want to, based on the little synopsis that I just gave, go ahead and skip ahead the next 30 seconds or so and you can avoid some light spoilers, nothing too spoily. So go ahead. Okay, so for those who aren't afraid to hear some light spoilers, Mallory picks up right where Bird Box left off. Mallory and the children, they have spent a bit of time in their new safe haven that they found at the end of Bird Box. But of course, all good things must come to an end. They are forced to flee, and they find themselves on a sightless journey once again for safety. So fast forward 10 years into their new life, and now we have Mallory, who is strict, there's only one way to survive, and she has the most dangerous adversaries of all. Teenagers. But seriously, her kids have grown up, they're now teenagers, and they've only known a post-civil society world where these creatures live, and they're full of curiosity. So Mallory's trust no one, see nothing, live by the blindfold philosophy will only work as long as her children don't challenge it. Well, news of other colonies of people and one person in particular who Mallory may have known from her past living among them spurs the group to another journey, which takes them again outside their comfort zone. So if you loved reading Bird Box or if you even enjoyed watching the 2018 Netflix adaptation, you won't want to miss this new discovery of where Mallory and her family are today and how they've continued to survive. So this one was definitely the highlight of my 2020 reading list. Next is another sequel that debuted in 2020. Earlier this year, there were some whispers that Ernest Cline, creator of the 2011 release Ready Player One and co-writer of the 2018 Steven Spielberg blockbuster, that he was recreating a follow-up to the novel Ready Player Two. So Ready Player Two was just released last month, and I've already been fortunate enough to gobble it up. So for those unfamiliar with the storyline of Ready Player One, here's again your quick synopsis. It's a nearish future, 2045, where the internet is now a fully immersive virtual reality universe called The Oasis. And most people live their entire lives online. They're connected through virtual reality haptic suits or headsets. And when the wealthy creator James Halliday dies with no living heir or family, he announces a giant Easter egg hunt within the Oasis universe. He's got lots of keys and gates hidden. And the prize, of course, is his immense fortune and control of the company behind the Oasis. So that's when we meet Wade Watts, or Parzival, his avatar, and his team of Gunters, which is short for Egg Hunters, who go on the hunt and, spoiler, they come out victorious on the other side. So what's fun about Ready Player One and Ready Player Two is the entirety of them are a blast from the past into the depths of 80s pop culture. As Halliday was growing up in the 80s and he remained obsessed with it into his adulthood, he built his entire universe around 1980s pop culture. So book one is full of references to 1980s video games, tabletop games, movies, TV, fashion, and more. It's like if the Matrix movies and the clue-finding wizards of Harry Potter had a baby in 1980, and then they named it Ready Player One. So again, you know, giving the audience what they want, Ernest Cline picks up Ready Player Two right where we left off. So I'll give you the same warning as I did before. If you haven't read any of Cline's works and now you want to, go ahead and skip ahead another 30 seconds to avoid some kind of spoilers that would, you know, you wouldn't know from Ready Player One that I'm going to talk about for Ready Player Two. So I'll resume in 3, 2, 1. All right. So just after Wade gains control of the company, he discovers that the deceased founder, James Halliday, has left another surprise for him. So it's a new upgrade to the Oasis that connects directly to users' brains, allowing for a truly immersive experience of touch, taste, and smell, as well as sight and sound. Along with it comes a new Easter egg hunt, a surprising villain, and the final hunt that hangs with a deadline that puts humanity in the balance. So a major critique that I had of Ready Player One was its lack of a dive into the music culture of the 80s. There was not a single music challenge, and I think that that's a giant part of the 80s. So Ready Player 2 redeems this in an incredibly satisfying way that I will leave as a surprise for you when you read it. The sequel also jumps into the film universe with a literal walk down John Hughes and his road. And I was feeling all of the warm fuzzies with an incredibly brief challenge that required a look into the children's television of 80s and 90s. Think Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, Reading Rainbow, Sesame Street, and even Gullah Gullah Island. So all your favorite players return, and the challenges are just as fun in this book as in the first book. It's fun, it's easy reading, and it's a really great escape into another universe or two or three or four. So a note from Ernest Cline at the end of the book in his acknowledgments even admits that he shared drafts of Ready Player Two along the way with Steven Spielberg, alluding to the fact that Spielberg may already be on board with another film adaptation. So fans of book one will give you an earful when they share how dissatisfyingly different the book and the film versions of Ready Player One are. So hopefully this ongoing relationship between Cline and Spielberg can remedy this for a movie sequel for Ready Player Two as well. Anyway, thanks for letting me talk about my favorites of 2020, which both happen to be sequels. And I hope you have happy reading.
Our director George recommends Homeland Elegies by Ayad Akhtar. A novel that feels like a memoir, it provides a different way of looking at the Muslim immigrant experience in America, and the experience of Muslims who, despite being born here in the U.S., are treated like outsiders. It also provides a different lens for understanding the state of the U.S. economy and why people feel so frustrated by our lack of mobility. George also loved Alex Trebek's autobiography, The Answer Is, Reflection on My Life. Published shortly before his death, the book is a warts and all look at Trebek's life, both before and during his Jeopardy years. He comes across as a decent human being, devoted to his family, committed to his charity, World Vision, and well aware of his own foibles. And that's a wrap, folks. I'd like to thank you for listening this past year. I hope 2021 will be a year of hope and inspiration for you all, but I'd like to leave you today with what Winston Churchill says of the future. It is a mistake to try to look too far ahead. The chain of destiny can only be grasped one link at a time. I'm your host, Annie Pasma. Thanks for listening.